It's interesting you referred to the bevacizumab first-line data, the ECOG 2100 data, as compelling, because it's actually been kind of interesting. It's been a little controversial. Of course, we're waiting to see if there's going to be FDA approval, reimbursement, their cost issues, all these other things. But then there's also putting that aside and looking at the clinical science of what happened in that trial, what happened in the prior capecitabine trial. Some people kind of seem like they're not that impressed with the E2100, and there are a lot of other people like you who are. What is it about that impresses you?
Well, I suppose I'm like anybody else. When I see a p-value of 0.001, I see effects that are fairly large. We forget easily how many negative trials we conduct and how much of our science is based on marginal significance. So when you get what appears to be a very robust outcome, and further, when you see this pattern, as I've mentioned already, in multiple tumor types, so that you have a scientific hypothesis that's compelling, you have something that seems to be repeated. Interestingly, in all situations, you do seem to get a greater effect from using bevacizumab early rather than late. That seems to be a relatively consistent pattern. I wouldn't say we've got it nailed down. We don't have that many studies, but we're talking about, around 9-10 randomized trials now? Yeah, we take colon, lung, breast, and renal. And there are 1 to 2 in each one of those. So that makes at least 6 to 8. I think there are even some additional small ones. So
yeah,
we're
colon,
somewhere around 8 randomized trials. And this pattern seems to be somewhat consistent. I find that together compelling. Yes, I would say the answer isn't in yet. It's a little disturbing that it wasn't quite as significant when presented the second time. This is now the paclitaxel study. That it wasn't quite as compelling the second time as it was the first time in terms of survival. I think when we're talking about marginal p-values, that you expect them to fluctuate somewhat.
I think some of this is psychological. I don't know. You know, I don't know if you would agree with this. Kathy Miller and George Ledge both will say the improvement that was seen by adding bevacizumab to a taxane, in this case paclitaxel, was greater than would have been seen with prior trials adding in a second form of chemotherapy like an anthracycline, and with relatively modest toxicity compared to using combination chemotherapy. And I think it's just hard for clinicians to look at data and try to put it in perspective and what it means. Those two, of course, are saying, you know, this is a good risk-benefit, putting aside the cost issues. This is a good risk-benefit buy for patients based on their data. Do you agree with that?
By and large, I do agree with it. I am a little concerned in that, and I think a lot of docs probably are, you know, medical oncologists are really very, very comfortable when we're dealing with myelosuppression. GI toxicity is a little harder for us to deal with because the patients feel it a lot.
And now we're becoming dermatologists.
That's right, with the hand-foot syndrome.
And also the EGFR and, you know, tons
well, that's of, right.
There, lots have, of rashes
there. We
out
have
there.
All those rashes, yes.
Yeah.
Although those never seem quite as serious as the hand-foot syndrome. But yes, you're right. But I don't think we're nearly as comfortable even with those things as we are with the very serious and potentially life-threatening issues of myelosuppression and even thrombocytopenia, because we've learned to live with that and we're very comfortable. When we move into these new areas, and I was thinking specifically of the issues of bleeding and hypertension with bevacizumab, they do make us worried. And I think that probably in the case of Kathy and George, since they've been actually doing the studies, they're probably a little ahead of the rest of us. They probably have a comfort level with some of those side effects that I haven't reached yet. It bothers me a little bit. And it also bothers me that the data are compelling enough that I think we're tempted to just add Avastin to everything, kind of all tumor therapy. And maybe that's going a little too fast. So on the one hand, it's promising we should be using it, but I'm still a little worried.
Well, you know, it's interesting because if you look at the average oncologist in practice who's treating lots of colon cancer, we know from our patterns of care studies that bevacizumab is standard care, first-line therapy, you know, usually with an oxaliplatin regimen, so they're used to it. The breast cancer investigators who don't see colon cancer actually are the ones, I think, that are not. And it's interesting that right now there is a lot of confusion, hesitation. I think if the drug were reimbursed tomorrow, I'm still not sure investigators would use it as much or ox in practice. And yet I look at the numbers and the risk-benefit ratio, and it looks positive.